What is up? Welcome to the Plus Pitch Podcast, your morning starting pitcher podcast brought to you by PitcherList.com. My name is Jake Crumpler, and today is September 2nd. Let's break down every single start from September 1st. We'll start it off with Hedickson Páez, and the White Sox selected Hedickson Páez in the Rule 5 draft over the previous offseason, and he made his MLB debut in a relief role in April. He was ultimately optioned to the minors and, per the rules of the draft in which he was taken, was returned to the Red Sox. The 22-year-old went on to pitch to a 4.11 ERA with a sub-1 whip, 0.96, with a 31% strikeout rate and a 3% walk rate, starting half of the 20 games in which he appeared. With impressive control and strikeout upside, there was some hype surrounding Páez's first big league start in his Red Sox debut, but his head was in the clouds against the Mariners as he struggled through 3.2 innings, 8 earned, 10 hits, 2 walks, and 3 strikeouts with 8 whiffs and 24% CSW across 87 pitches. And given an external club's interest in him, his impressive minor league numbers, and his young age, there's got to be something here to get excited about. But was there anything in Tuesday's start to keep him in the back of our minds for 2027? With any starter, Páez's arsenal deserves an SP roundup introduction. He wields a decent 92-mile-per-hour four-seamer that plays up thanks to 17 inches of IVB, 1.1 HAVA, and above average 6.7 feet of extension. If Páez could keep that four-seamer upstairs, it has potential to end at bats, but he'll need to display better command than the 57% strikes it returned on Tuesday. His signature pitch is a straight changeup with a little arm side run at 83 miles per hour, but it plays well off his heater and was commanded well low and arm side against left-handed batters. The tertiary offerings aren't any less interesting. A big 79-mile-per-hour curveball was able to consistently find the zone and steal free real estate. There was also a sinker that was deployed downstairs right-handed batters, but it didn't earn chases and didn't prop up his strike rate as it should. That pitch will be integral if his four-seamer isn't reliably commanded in the future. The X factor, in my opinion, though, was an 85 to 86 mile per hour cutter. I think it's a slider with 3 inches of IVB and -2 horizontal, and that will be integral in making Páez effective as a right-handed changeup focused pitcher. He'll be prone to right-handed batters, but with a cutter or slider, he'll have a weapon to pair with his fastballs to neutralize same-handed hitters. By no means does Páez have an overwhelming arsenal, but it's a deep pitch mix that covers all the bases. What was missing on Tuesday was the impeccable control he displayed throughout his rise through the minors. He'll need to locate effectively and throw plenty of strikes to maximize the effectiveness of his arsenal moving forward. I don't think Páez was so hittable that he deserved to be singled out with a 500 BABIP and 2 homers, accounting for half of the runs he allowed. Koufax will be kinder to him in the future, but he needs to do his part and bump up that strike rate. Páez is back to the minors after this spot start, but I'll be keeping an eye on him if he gets another chance to start in September. There's no clear path to the rotation in 2027 with so much starting talent in Boston, but we saw this year how quickly spots can open up. On top of that, Páez isn't done evolving. He'll be just 23 next year and has a great base off of which to build. Don't get too hyped, but he's someone we can daydream about. Now let's see how every other starting pitcher did on Tuesday, starting with Gavin Williams versus the Blue Jays. He tossed 7 shutout innings, allowing 2 hits with 1 walk and 13 strikeouts. He induced 23 whiffs with 44% CSW to earn the golden goal. Ace is going to ace for Gavin Williams. He's fanned double-digit batters in 7 of his last 10 starts. I just want to see him continue to throw strikes and keep that sinker under wraps. Just keep relying on that four-seamer and those breakers. Next, we have Sean Burke in Houston, 5 2/3 scoreless innings, 1 hit, 4 walks, and 6 strikeouts. And technically, that's a bounce back, but Burke gave us something else to worry about as his average fastball velocity fell below 94 miles per hour. When Burke is at his best, he's hitting 95 to 96 miles per hour. And it's not like he curbed the issues from last game as much either. 4 walks is half as many as the 8 walks he issued last time, but it's also twice as many as 2 walks and 4 times as many as 1 walk. What I'm trying to say is that Burke's command was all over the place. He's throwing softer, and he was lucky Koufax turned a blind eye, allowing him to return 11 outs on 12 balls in play. I'm nervous for Burke's next start hosting the Twins. Speaking of the Twins, Connor Prelip pitched against the Tigers, helped the Twins to a win, tossing five scoreless innings with three hits, one walk, and five strikeouts. But don't be fooled. We want Prelip to be a guy we can chase for strikeout upside, but pitching behind opener Andrew Morris isn't the solution. Yes, it worked out here, but other than his slider looking better than it ever has been, all of his issues persisted. The breaker is the only pitch we had no concerns about. It tried to do everything, though, by itself, bumping its usage north of 40% while sitting two ticks harder at 90 miles per hour as it dominated with 37% CSW and 73% strikes. And you're asking, what about everything else? Well, four-seamers were commanded poorly, returning just 50% strikes and failing to be the supportive pitch they need to be to help Prelip avoid breaking the Huascar rule. We've also been looking for a third pitch to step up. Curveballs have been there in the past and sinkers have propped up his strike rate recently, but we want the changeup to show up to force right-handed batters to respect his entire arsenal. Each of those pitches was thrown no more than 8 times, suggesting that Prelip doesn't trust them and he's unwilling to incorporate them more than he has this season. Prelip only feels comfortable with his slider, and it's a dope pitch, but that's not going to cut it in Detroit next. Next, we've got Tyler Phillips in Kansas City. 5 scoreless innings, 1 hit, 2 walks, and 4 strikeouts. The Marlins have been inconsistent with Phillips' leash this year. Are they going to let him extend that leash and interact with that neighbor dog? Are they going to keep him tight to his heel? Phillips is way too unpredictable as a result of the volatility in his workload. Even when he's at his best, the Marlins cut him off at low pitch counts. He's completed 6 frames just twice in this season, and it came in consecutive starts in late June, which suggests that they're not going to let him go deep. And I don't think we'll see him give us enough chances to put Phillips in line for wins, nor do I think he'll command well enough with an arsenal prone to left-handed batters often to make his short starts worth our time anyway. Next, we have Ronel Blanco versus the White Sox. 4 scoreless innings, 3 hits, 3 walks, and 3 strikeouts. And after a brief stint in the minors, Blanco is back and continuing to display the inefficiency that necessitated his demotion in the first place. He struggled to keep his secondaries low, but most importantly, his four-seamers returned sub 50% strikes. Blanco found himself in plenty of two-strike counts with a 71% two-strike rate, but due to his lack of fastball command, he could not find the put-away pitch he needed to end at bats, returning an 8% per pitch put-away rate that inflated his pitch count, forcing an exit before the 5th frame. I love Blanco's stuff, but I'm not trusting him this year. Hopefully, he works out the command kinks to be someone we trust as a potential Holly in 2027. Next, we have Jesus Luzardo in Arizona. 6 2/3 innings, 1 earned, 6 hits, 1 walk, and 6 strikeouts. Ace is going to ace for Luzardo. Fastballs didn't avoid damage, but luckily the worst of it was a mere solo shot. This is like when you get fast food and they forget something in your order, but it's just the ketchup packet, so it doesn't really matter. I'm more of a ranch guy anyway. Next, we have Freddy Peralta versus the Mets. 6 innings, 1 earned, 3 hits, no walks, and 7 strikeouts. The Rays finally fixed Freddy Peralta. Last time, he finally had his first good start in new threads, but facing his former club, he looked even better than ever. It was the Blake Snell blueprint with increased changeup usage in Detroit, but hosting the Mets, Peralta kept everything arm side, showcasing the best command and efficiency he's had all year, just 74 pitches to survive 6 frames. The pitch separation between heaters and slow balls was impeccable. We saw heaters up and away to left-handed batters with changeups low and away, while breakers snuck in the front door to join the party. The crossbody mechanics of Peralta have led to inconsistent command throughout his career, so we should be a little skeptical that this command is going to stick around beyond Tuesday. But if Peralta can pull this off every time, he's going to be dope. I'm willing to give it a whirl in Atlanta next. Next, we've got Brian Wu in Boston. 6 innings, 1 earned, 5 hits, 1 walk, and 7 strikeouts. Home road splits, Schmitz. Wu has turned up the heat on his fastball recently, sitting 97 miles per hour in his past 4 starts, allowing him to put to rest the fears that he's only good when pitching in the friendly confines of at T. After giving up 6 runs at home in his last start, let's hope this isn't just a complete 180 of his splits. And regardless, I think Wu's not going to achieve his strikeout potential without support from his breakers. And with his reliance on heaters more than 2/3 of the time, I don't think we're going to see a strikeout surge in September. But as long as Wu is sitting 97 with plenty of strikes and few home runs, he's going to be an elite Holly the rest of the way. Let's hope he does enough hosting the A's next to get us to consider starting him during his trip on the Green Mile afterwards. Next, we have Mackenzie Gore versus the A's. five and a third innings, one earned, five hits, four walks, and four strikeouts. A perfect candidate for the Blake Snell blueprint approach, Gore has rarely displayed the command to pull it off for multiple starts. It was around for most of August, and it's sticking around in September, but he's still working on cleaning up the edges. Three of Gore's four walks came in full count, suggesting he was more competitive in the zone than the number of free passes points to. He also left a few too many pitches in the heart of the zone, but he lived to tell the tale. Regardless, as long as Gore's keeping heaters upstairs and secondaries down low, he's going to be pretty solid, and he's worth chasing for the strikeout upside. Hopefully he can stop being a hipster so we can start him freely down the stretch. Next, we have Gabriel Hughes versus the Orioles. Four and two-thirds innings, one earned, four hits, two walks, and four strikeouts. Hughes walked the bases loaded with two outs in the fifth, forcing an early exit before he could qualify for a win. His unique profile, defined by a 92 to 93 mile per hour cutter and elite extension, could find a way to survive in Coors with more experience. But for now, we're going to avoid Hughes when he's pitching at home and when he's pitching on the road, and probably everywhere in between as well. Next, we have Nick Lodolo versus the Padres. Six innings, two earned, five hits, two walks, and five strikeouts. It's been a tough season for Lodolo as he's dealt with a finger blister that has affected both his availability and his command. He sort of looked better than ever on Tuesday, commanding his four-pitch mix better than I've seen in a while. He created a rainbow with red four-seamers upstairs, yellow sinkers, middle and arm side, green changeups, low and arm side, and blue curveballs hitting the dirt or the back foot of right-handed batters. It was enough to propel him to his first start of six frames since July 5th and just his second since the end of May. Unfortunately, Lodolo gets the Dodgers back-to-back in his next two starts now, so we should send him back to the wire as we prepare for his matchups against some really tough offenses. Next, we have Kyle Bradish in Colorado. Five innings, two earned, six hits, two walks, and four strikeouts. Bradish has been going through tough times, so of course he pitched pretty well in Coors. All he gave us was a good ERA, no win, poor whip, and just four strikeouts, but at least he didn't get destroyed, and I feel like I'm grasping for straws. He hasn't had both his breakers working in concert since late June, forcing his hittable heaters to step up and get wrecked in the zone. Bradish has failed to fan more than five batters in a start since June 22nd, pitching to a 4.58 ERA, a 1.37 whip, and a 17% strikeout rate in 11 starts since then. That juice ain't worth squeezing, hosting the Red Sox next. Next, we've got Randy Vasquez and Robert Gasser and Jake Irvin and everybody else who pitched on Tuesday. But first, we're going to take a quick break here on the Plus Pitch podcast. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here, breaking down every single start from September 1st. Let's resume with Randy Vasquez in Cincinnati. Four and two-thirds innings, two earned, five hits, one walk, and three strikeouts. Things started to fall apart in the fifth for Vasquez as he gave up a pair of hits to score the second run against him. And despite being below 70 pitches, he was forced to get the bullpen involved. It's not a ringing endorsement to have your club have that little faith in you to get out of a jam like that. Vasquez is still throwing harder, sitting 96 miles per hour with four seamers and 93 with cutters. But when you throw them middle, they're not going to induce the whiffs and rack up the strikeouts that he needs to get us interested. Vasquez has fanned more than three batters just twice in 19 outings since mid-May, barely maintaining a strikeout rate north of 10%. This is not the Toby you're looking for. Next, we have Robert Gasser in the north side of Chicago. Four and a third innings, two earned, three hits, two walks, and four strikeouts. Go out there and give it your all is what I'm guessing the Brewers said to Gasser before he threw harder than he has all season while being limited to just 76 pitches. It's hard to trust Gasser as a streamer if he can't survive five frames, something he's failed to do in three of his last five starts. The leash is an issue, but so is the lack of efficiency stemming from poor command, sub 60% overall strike rate here from Robert Gasser, as well as an error-induced taxing fourth frame. There's not enough strikeout upside with Gasser to make him worth chasing if he's not guaranteed to qualify for a win. Next, we have Jake Irvin versus the Braves. Four innings, two earned, five hits, one walk, and five strikeouts. And Irvin is doing everything he can to get us interested, except for being efficient enough to survive five frames. Irvin's throwing one to two ticks harder across the board, throwing plenty of strikes, and relying on a deep arsenal featuring six offerings. With his heater sitting 94 miles per hour with an elite 7.2 feet of extension, it gets on batters quickly, and in concert with his signature curveball, this should be working better than it did here. The disconnect, though, is an issue of command, preventing him from putting batters away quickly and avoiding balls in play against heaters that are trying to steal the heart of the zone. This is no time to be advancing your love life. We're trying to strike batters out, Jake Irvin. Next, we have Spencer Arrighetti in Cleveland. 3 2/3 innings, two earned, 2 hits, 1 walk, and 2 strikeouts, and pitching in bulk relief of opener Spencer Miles. Arrighetti is making the trade-off of increased velocity for a shorter workload. He's not going as deep, but he's throwing harder. That might be good for the Blue Jays, who get a superior version of Arrighetti, but it doesn't work for fantasy managers who don't get enough volume from the righty to qualify for a win or offset his mediocre ratios. At least Arrighetti's expanding his arsenal a little beyond the four-seamers and curveballs. The potential for a kitchen sink approach working for Arrighetti is there, but he'll need to do something he doesn't always do, throw a bunch of strikes. Next, we've got Brady Basso in Texas. 2 1/3 innings, 2 earned, 4 hits, no walks, and 2 strikeouts. And I'm going to Passo on Basso after he opened in a bullpen game for the A's. Next, we have Garrett Cole in Anaheim. 5 1/3 innings, 3 earned, 8 hits, 1 walk, and 5 strikeouts. And Ace is going to get singled out with a .444 BABIP and 6 out of his 8 hits, earning just 1 total base. I'm going to blame a ridiculous 34% foul ball rate on four-seamers that prevented Cole from putting batters away, ending at bats quickly, or avoiding balls in play altogether. It's rocky road next, so let's just forget about this one and start Garrett Cole moving forward. Next, we got Matthew Boyd versus the Brewers. 5 1/3 innings, 3 earned, 7 hits, 1 walk, and 3 strikeouts. And Boyd had just 1 run on his ledger through 5 frames, but he left the 6th inning with 2 men on and 1 out, only to watch both runners come around to score in a clear, careful Icarus. There was better execution of the BSB here, with 4-seamers sitting above the zone and changeup sitting downstairs, but Boyd's breakers were awful. Like 8-year-old me with guests over, curveballs were upstairs more often than they were downstairs, and sliders couldn't find the zone with a 7% zone rate. Boyd hasn't looked like himself for a while, fanning just 14% of the batters he's faced across his last 10 starts due to a lack of command. That's integral for a guy without overwhelming stuff. If you're hunting wins or quality starts, I'm fine starting Boyd in Miami, but he's not somebody that's going to get you strikeouts, and the ratios have been very inconsistent. Next, we have Eduardo Rodriguez versus the Phillies. 5 innings, 3 earned, 8 hits, 3 walks, and 3 strikeouts. And this is like when you try the weird food your friend has been begging you to try for the first time. It's not terrible, but I don't want it again. This was a Wonka from E-Rod, but we got to give him a mulligan after all he's done for us this year. Next, we have Grayson Rodriguez versus the Yankees. 6 innings, 4 earned, 7 hits, 2 walks, and 7 strikeouts. Grayrod was bamboozled in the first for a pair of long balls, knocking in 3 runs before he locked in for 5 frames of 1-run ball with a ton of whiffs on his changeup and 4-seamer. However, until I see improved 4-seamer shape, better pitch separation between his heater and slow ball, or one of his breakers stepping up to support the 1-2 punch and give him a weapon against right-handed batters, I have to remain incredulous about Grayrod's success. Next, we have Michael McGreevy in Hollywood. 5 innings, 4 earned, 5 hits, 2 walks, and 4 strikeouts. McGreevy almost got it done against the Dodgers with some well-located changeups and extra velocity, but it's McGreevy against the Dodgers. Now he heads to Coors, and we're going to keep ignoring him no matter how many times he calls our names. Don't look at him. Just point to the board that displays McGreevy's second half ERA, 6.11. Next, we have Sean Manaea in Tampa Bay. 5 2/3 innings, 5 earned, 11 hits, 1 walk, and 2 strikeouts. Manaea whipped out his changeup for a change, but it failed to offset his reduced velocity. He was sub 92 miles per hour here, and he lacked command. Nothing landed low, and way too many pitches sat in the middle of the zone. That's now 4 straight starts of 4 runs or more from Sean Manaea, and it's time to move on, even when he heads to Miami next. Next, we got Troy Melton in Minnesota. 5 1/3 innings, 5 earned, 6 hits, 1 walk, and 4 strikeouts. And we knew Melton was going to face some regression after pitching to a sub-2 ERA through his first 14 starts, but we didn't expect it to hit this hard. Four-seamers and cutters are still dope, showcasing increased velo and earning plenty of strikes, but without any of his off-speed pitches eclipsing 60% strikes and contributing to an overall 16% CSW, he's clearly not fooling anybody. But with Melton heading to Cleveland before getting rocky road, as long as he maintains his extra velocity and throw strikes, I'm going to keep sending him out there. Next, we have Paul Skeens versus the Giants. 4 2/3 innings, 5 earned, 8 hits, 3 walks, and 4 strikeouts. The velo was there. Skeens sat 97 plus miles per hour with his heaters, which is nice, but everything else was awful, combining for 41% strikes and failing to induce a whiff. When I first deep dive Skeens, I noted that despite his decreased velocity, his heaters continued to perform well and that his secondaries appear to be the problem. Whether that's correlated to the diminished fastball velocity, it's hard to say, but Skeens is going to have to command his secondaries better either way. At this point, I think if you roster Skeens, you just sort of have to keep starting him and hope you get the good version of him. But I understand the frustration. It's been a very weird and difficult season for Paul Skeens. Next, we have AJ Smith-Shaver in our nation's capital. 4 innings, 5 earned, 6 hits, 3 walks, and 5 strikeouts. A primary splitter arm without a breaker to neutralize right-hand batters is going to struggle often in the majors. AJ Smith-Shaver gets it done with the Blake Snell blueprint against left-handed batters, but with sub-50% strikes on sinkers and breakers against same-handed hitters, he couldn't keep the bases empty. His splitter is dope, but without a legit support offering beyond a decent four-seamer, Smith-Shaver breaks the Huascar rule. The Braves seem to have an affinity for guys like that, not only Huascar Ynoa himself, but Grant Holmes, Reynaldo Lopez, J.R. Ritchie, and a number of other guys. They have a lot of these guys that have that signature great pitch, but not a lot to support it. Next, we have Randy Dobnak versus the Marlins. 6 innings, 6 earned, 7 hits, 2 walks, and 6 strikeouts. And I want every pitcher to be dope, especially the weird ones, but it feels like everything is right in the world when a pitcher who exceeds our expectations for a long period of time finally performs as you'd expect. I wouldn't count out Dobnak locking in his command against the lowly Blue Jays next to restart his Vargas rule, but this seems to be the end of that run. Second to last, we've got Eric Lauer versus the Cardinals. 3 innings, 7 earned, 8 hits, 1 walk, and 2 strikeouts. And we stream Lauer for a chance at a win against weak offenses. This was an ideal matchup, but it's hard to secure a win when you get singled out in the third frame. Lauer allowed 5 singles in that inning alone and watched in horror as 5 runs came around to score. I guess Koufax wasn't a fan of Lauer's curveball from the left side. Lauer may need to get another start with Justin Wroblewski back from the IL. Or he may not get another start with Justin Wroblewski back from the IL and with Shohei Ohtani on the verge of returning to the rotation. Lastly, we've got Logan Webb in Pittsburgh. 2 innings, 9 earned, 9 hits, 2 walks, and 1 strikeout. Oof, what a way to ruin some playoff matchups at the start of the week. Webb was left in way too long as he got singled out in the third. 4 straight singles opened the inning before Webb started nibbling, walking the next 2 batters before another single knocked him out of the game. 2 more runs scored after he exited, and this was a clear Koufax horror show and a one-night bland. I can guarantee you that Webb won't return a 692 BABIP in his next start in Queens. That's every single start from Tuesday, September 1st. Now, my game of the day for September 2nd, Cam Schlittler versus Reed Detmers. Schlittler looks to put the final touches on a Cy Young caliber campaign, while Detmers continues to make me forget about all the factors that had me worried about his demise. That's going to do it for this episode of the Plus Pitch Podcast. Make sure to head on over to pitcherlist.com and sign up for PL Plus or PL Pro to gain access to all of the incredible features we have on the site, as well as access to our Discord so you can talk to the PitcherList staff. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler, and you can catch me on the First Pitch Podcast, the In the Pen Podcast, and find more of my work over at crumplerbaseball.com. That's going to do it for this episode of the Plus Pitch Podcast. We'll break down every single start from Wednesday tomorrow.